Hey guys, I wanted to tell you about another podcast from Evergreen Podcasts called Press Box Access. Join former sports writer Todd Jones as he interviews one of motorsport's most accomplished writers, Al Pearce. He talks everything from NASCAR and Formula One to the death of a legend in Dale Earnhardt Sr.
When you think about Earnhardt, what do you think about?
He would not want you to know how soft he was as a human being.
Hmm.
He would want you to know he was a badass racer who came from 18th to win at Talladega, who flipped and rolled at Daytona, got out of his car, noticed that the four tires were still up, got back in it, had them push it to the garage where it could be repaired. He would not want you to know that if you were a member of the media or you were a crewman for another team, and something happened back at home, and you had to go back to Charlotte or wherever you lived, you could have his airplane. He would not tell you anybody that I sent two guys home yesterday. Their wives went into labor. They couldn't get there in driving time. Mm. I gave them my plane. Mm. He'd never tell you that. He would tell you, I wouldn't wreck my mother to win, but I'd wreck your mother. And he was that way. He was so focused on winning.
The Intimidator.
Listen to this full episode of Press Box Access featuring Al Pearce wherever you get your favorite podcasts or on evergreenpodcast.com. Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Frenchie is here. Sarah is on her way to Indianapolis. So it is just us tonight. We are going to talk a little bit about qualifying. We'll make some race predictions, kind of talk about everything that unfolds. Obviously, I guess kind of the sad news to get out of the way is after a practice accident today, Stefan Wilson fractured his 12th thoracic vertebrae. So unfortunately he's being held overnight, which tonight is, what day is it? Monday night for observation. But unfortunately that means he's not going to race. We're not going to speculate on who can replace him. We'll let the news play out whenever it plays out. But kind of similar to, was it Hinchcliffe, when Hinchcliffe got hurt and Ryan Briscoe was able to get a special hour session to kind of get up and running in the car a little bit that year, I'm sure we will see something similar. So we shall see. But yeah, hopefully he's able to recover soon, maybe get in a race late in the season or later in the season. So definitely a bummer, man.
Yeah, it was not, I mean, there wasn't much that could have been done, I don't think. It was a strange accident just because everyone was slowing up and it looked like Catherine Legg really tried to put on the brakes, and obviously it didn't work out that way. It just happened, I think, the way that he hit the wall, unfortunately. And he's 6'4", doesn't help.
Sure.
So,
sure.
You know, but we'll see. I think obviously we don't want to see anyone get injured, but that was a nasty crash. And, you know, while we were watching it, just kind of see the medical crews show up, you never know what's going to happen. So as far as injuries go, I'm glad Stefan is okay. And, yeah, you know, missing the race is unfortunate, but his health is what's most important.
Correct. Couldn't agree more there. I have some interesting Indy 500 qualifying facts that I'm going to run through a couple of these. Then we'll go do our predictions, talk about the craziness that was this weekend, and then we'll make a couple race predictions. Let's see here. Alex Palou is the first Spanish driver to win a pole for the greatest spectacle in racing. That's pretty impressive, because obviously he's not the first Spanish driver to race in the 500 over the last couple of years. Third consecutive pole for Ganassi. We saw that already. Everybody's probably heard that like 800 times. All right, let's make this a trivia question for you, Frenchie. This was not planned. Before this year, how many other number 10s have won the Indy 500 pole?
Hmm.
I'll give you a hint. The last one.
Dario.
No.
Right? Wasn't Dario a number 10 with Ganassi for a while?
Yeah, but no. They
that may not be the last one, but...
No,
I didn't let you finish the question. So
you didn't. Yeah. Because I was going to tell you the last one was pre-year 2000.
Okay. So what was Dario running, number 9?
No, that would have been Dixon. I don't remember what number Dario was running, but he did not get the pole any year he was running.
Oh, not the pole. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. Number 10 winner of
the pole.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Because I can easily picture the winners of the 500, but I have to think a little bit more about who got the pole each year.
Yeah. I can give you a hint. I don't know who won is. There's the last time was in 1993. It was also a Ganassi driver.
Yeah, if that who won the pole in 1993, wasn't that Ari Leyendyke?
Yep, number 10.
Yeah. Okay.
That was Ganassi's first pole. Now I don't have whoever the other one is because it's not noted in this little thing that IndyCar sent out. Let's see here. This is the closest front row in Indy 500 history in terms of speed, with 0.103 of a mile per hour separating the third starter in Felix Rosenquist from Pillow, the pole winner. That's pretty crazy. Let's see here. Benjamin Peterson recorded the second fastest four lap qualifying average by a rookie in Indy 500 history for a less than impressive Foyt team. That's, I don't know, probably the most amazing stat we're going to see. And the record is obviously Tony Stewart back in 96. Also, Peterson turned the fastest qualifying lap ever in terms of a single lap by a rookie at 2:33.297. Tony had a 2:33.179 in 96. He just had a better four lap average. So,
wow.
Yeah. Let's see. Is there anything else on this list? I have not read this. Canapino becomes the first Argentine driver to qualify for the 500 since Raul Raganti in 1940. Never heard of him before. And yeah, I think we will wrap the facts right there. And Frenchie, you can look at how terrible our predictions were.
Yes. They were not good. Also, didn't Juan Manuel Fangio try to qualify for the 500?
Look that up.
He never made the race, obviously. So, but I know he's from Argentina. So that was just something I thought about. I think it was 1958 he was trying to make the race.
1958, he attempted to qualify, but did not. Sorry, Wikipedia is less than ideal in terms of failed to qualify. He tried in two different cars.
Okay, interesting. That is really odd to think about somebody who is that gifted and won that many Formula One championships. Yeah. But I think at that time, 1958, it was even more of a different discipline than it is now.
Wait, can we just look at the failed entries from that year real quick? Because there's some pretty amazing names on there. So Pat Flaherty, didn't he win? Yeah, he won.
He's a winner.
56 race it was? Yeah, 56. Flaherty won. Let's see. Fred Agabashian failed in four different cars he tried in. Holy hell. Troy Ruttman failed to qualify in that one.
Okay, another winner.
This guy's name looks familiar, but maybe no.
What is it?
Dutch Schaefer. I don't know why.
No, that just sounds like a stereotypical race car driver name, but.
And then Carroll Shelby, who did not take his rookie test.
So that was 1958.
58, yeah.
Yeah, so Shelby went on to win Le Mans the next year with Aston Martin.
All right, now we can go to those bad predictions.
Okay, yeah, they were pretty awful. So we predicted the last row, and my last row was RC Enerson, Helio, Callum, who we thought might be in the last row until Saturday, right?
Yep.
And then, let's see. And Benjamin Peterson. What? That was a really bad take from me.
Ooh.
He showed me wrong. Oh my gosh, he was really impressive. So Peterson, what, qualified 12th?
Let me switch screens here. 11th.
11th. Okay, so, yep, not in the last row. Where did Elio qualify?
Not in the last row.
No.
20th.
Qualified 20th, so meh. Callum was 28th, and RC was 29th. So you had Canapino, who...
27th.
Okay, so, I mean, these are people towards the back of the grid. Lundgaard, who was in the last row, so you got that one right. Enerson, and then you also had Kirkwood. And Kirkwood, nope, Andretti overall didn't look that good.
Kirkwood was 15th.
Yeah.
So my worst pick was lower than your worst pick, but all in all, we at least I had one, but that still wasn't impressive.
And then for the poll, I picked Sato, and nope, he qualified 7th. And you had Pelot. You picked correctly, which I picked Pelot in fantasy.
Did I really?
Yeah, you picked the poll winner correctly.
Wow, I didn't even remember that I did that. I'm gonna have to go downstairs and talk to Pops afterwards about how amazing my predictions are.
Well, the poll average speed we also guessed. I said 234.8 or 9, which was optimistic because we ended up with 234.2. Yeah, 217.
Yeah,
and you said 233.5. So technically, you would win if we play Price is Right rules.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I went over, but neither of us were insane. Neither of us said that we were going to see like a 237 or something like that, which I don't know how delusional you would have had to be to think there was going to be that year on year increase in speed, but there you go. Let's see. Oh, person who was going to damage the car first, which unfortunately we saw the first accident of the month of May today.
Yeah, we can skip that one.
Yeah, we had a guess and neither of us were correct.
Is that it for predictions?
Yeah, those are all of our qualifying predictions.
All right. Well, let's talk about qualifying. I think Saturday was a lot of fun, and you know, just watching, I guess, you know, I don't know what you think, but maybe the, you know, because the weather was what it was, and it was pretty cool all day. Track temps didn't get as hot as it was Sunday, so it was easier for, you know, easier in quotation marks for the cars to cool down in their engines. So we didn't see what we usually saw on qualifying Saturday, where there's like a lull early afternoon after everybody's done their initial run. What did you think of, you know, at least Saturday?
I think we talked about that the Penske strategy was interesting, at least the strategy that they had with Joseph and Scott McLaughlin.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead. You go first.
So that was just, it seemed really strange because they just withdrew the slots, right? That they mm-hmm. didn't even put up a time and they just went in the priority lane
mm-hmm.
at a certain point in the afternoon when they thought they were going to go fast enough. And I mean, neither of them qualified poorly, but 17th and 14th, I mean, you're just that kind of outside the
mm-hmm.
top 12. And I don't know if they would have gotten in the top 12 if they had waited for their spots, or who knows, but I don't know, maybe with a little bit more data sitting there and watching more cars go around, being more patient, that could have worked out for them.
Yeah, I think the, I don't know if big mistake is the right word, but the issue is, I get what they were trying to do in theory. The track temps never got as warm as I think they maybe expected, or we all maybe expected. But also, once Pelot went out there and ran that 234 or 233, whatever he ran on Saturday, I don't remember. And they went, oh shit, maybe we should get out there. Like, why, mm-hmm. why wouldn't, like you said, like you just said, why don't they just stay in line? And if they're a little bit leery about conditions at the time that they would have run, they would go, hey, listen, we're going to pull out and, you know, wait 15 minutes or wait 45 minutes or whatever. Because they ended up, I don't want to say they ended up screwing themselves, but I think McLaughlin was one or two spots after Pelot, and obviously Newgarden was four or five spots after Pelot. So maybe you let McLaughlin go, because I think he would have maybe not done as well as Pelot, but I think he would have been a little bit faster. By the time you got to Newgarden, or where Newgarden would have been, the track was, I think, starting to warm up a little bit, but I don't know. All in all, I don't agree with it. I just think it's a really, it's just a strange strategy call from such a usually sound team like that.
Yeah, that was, I think, the main thing that stood out to me for the day. And I guess also maybe the other thing on Saturday that I really took was, number one, and we'll talk about this probably a little bit more, that Foyt was extremely impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But number two, that Andretti was surprisingly, I mean, I'm not going to say slow, because none of their cars were really awful, but none of them were as impressive as we have come to expect for that team. And it wasn't at a Ray Hall level, but it was still confusing.
I would say they were adequate. Like, they weren't necessarily bad, but by no means were they impressive. Like, they were just, you know, they were just there. Like, they were honestly what you would expect from, like, a Meyer Shank or a Coin, that, like, they're safely in the field, but they're not really battling for the top 12. Like, outside of Kirkwood, who was in the top 12 for, like, 45 minutes, like, I don't think Herta got even close to the top 12 on time, did he? I don't think so.
Not that I remember, no. I think maybe was Marco in there for a little bit? I don't know if I remember.
I don't think so.
How many times that changed? Okay.
Because remember, he said our effort or our speed or whatever is unacceptable, blah, blah, blah. Like, he went off on,
yeah,
on when he got interviewed Saturday.
Yeah, it was interesting. And then also, I guess I just wanted to mention that I thought it was, I don't know, striking how much of a beatdown Rinus VK put on his two teammates.
Yeah.
And his two teammates, I mean, obviously you never count out Ed Carpenter at the 500. He's the oval specialist. I don't know about every oval, but at the 500, just like Elio, I give him credit, and he's somebody I'm not going to count out for at least qualifying up near the front. And sure. Connor too. I think Connor's probably the most impressive on short ovals and then the 500.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the Ed Carpenter cars, which tend to be really good. That was odd to see how much faster Rinus was than the two of those guys.
Yeah, I expected at least one of Ed or Connor to be up there with Rinus, especially because they probably have close to similar setups like they have the last couple of years. Because the last couple of years, Ed's been up there, Rinus has been up there, Connor's been up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
in the fast nine usually, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. And even like Ed made it in there, but Ed was not, you know, not certain. He was in the back half of the fast 12, so it was definitely a curious effort. But let's move to Sunday. Obviously Saturday, the end of the day, we saw co-host Malukas keep himself safe from having to worry about running on Sunday with a really nice effort to add, I think it was like a mile and a quarter out per hour to his average qualifying speed there. So that was really good to see.
Definitely, on the bubble to 23rd? Put himself up there.
Yeah, he technically jumped from having no time to 23rd because, you know, he lost his time. So that was great. Obviously, I was at a friend's house in Philly, and I was pacing around his living room relentlessly to somebody who had never really watched IndyCar before. And he did enjoy the hour and change of qualifying we watched. So I think Sunday, let's start with Ray Hall, like the team. Before the season, we thought, oh my God, they hired more new engineers, like some really incredible talents. I hired that one guy from F1 whose name is escaping
me. Stefano Sordo.
Yeah.
From McLaren.
Yeah, and wow, that's a great hire. Like, that's obviously a really smart guy if he, you know, worked for F1. And then I thought this weekend, and I saw it a couple of times online, maybe hiring a guy from F1 to lead your, you know, aero package for ovals is maybe you should have hired maybe a assistant engineer or somebody below him that has IndyCar oval experience. Because, like, I mean, those cars were just, I paid a lot of attention to their telemetry, especially on Sunday on the straights versus the the Fast 12. It was almost like we were watching a different racing series when we compared the two. On the straights, the Ray Hall cars got to about, on the back straight, about 233 at the most.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, you'd see Harvey like blip like 235 for like a quarter second. On the straights, the top cars are hitting, on the back straight, the top cars are hitting 241, 242.
Yeah.
And then coming out of turn four, a lot of times both Ray Hall and Harvey were 226, 228, mostly in the 227, 228. So they're losing all of their speed through the corners. And so by the time they get to the next corner, they're only at 233, 234 again. They're losing all their speed in the corner and they have no straight line speed. I don't know if it's the engineering fault. I'm not like trying to blame Stefano, whatever the hell his name is, but it's like, this is like almost worse than Foyt level of embarrassment at any race this year, to have all four of your cars qualify 30th, or three of your four cars qualify 30th or worse.
And your full-time cars.
Right. All yeah. three of your full-time cars had to run again on Sunday to get in. And the only car that didn't have to run on Sunday, in Catherine Legg, who did a fantastic job, only qualified 30th.
Right.
Like, that's just a dismal effort. Like, it's almost like they put in no effort. And I know they put in effort. That's very mean of me to say. But the optics look horrendous.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on!
No, it does. And I mean, maybe Stefano Sordo was the guy who was heading up McLaren's Indy 500 effort in 2017. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know about that. I'm just making that up. But yeah, I mean, we've seen F1 guys come, because wasn't Gavin Ward in F1? Like, he worked in F1 before he came over to IndyCar. Yeah, so there are people who've come.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate two engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!
Over from F1 and been extremely successful. And then remember when Lena Gade, she did some work in F1, right? But she also did like WEC work, Audi. And then she wasn't that successful.
She wasn't as successful. She was the year Hinch got bumped. And I think after the 500 or after he got bumped, I'm pretty sure that's when she went, you know, to WEC or wherever she ended up going afterwards. But yeah.
Yeah. So it's just really strange. And do you think, we haven't gotten an explanation for why the cars were so slow, right? They didn't really know.
Mm-mm.
Did they just put a ton more downforce on because they had to? Because it just looked like they were running like a sail or like a parachute behind their car, like you were talking about, where they just had so much more drag.
It's weird. It's like they were losing speed in the corners. So you think, okay, they don't have enough downforce on the car.
Right.
But if they don't have enough downforce on the car, at least they should be able to get a little bit of straight line speed. And they had neither. So was the car not worked on correctly throughout the off-season preparation? Was it the engine? Was it the damper program for the corner speed? You know, I don't know, but like you could say it's 18 things and probably not be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to change a chassis on one of the cars. I don't know if we ever got confirmation if it was like Ray Hall or Harvey or whatever, but you can't change a chassis on a car unless, you know, you wreck or something happens.
Right.
Once Friday practice is done. So I think once the qualifying draw is done at 6:30 in the evening, like the chassis you finished Friday practice with is the chassis you're running in qualifying. So they tried to change it Saturday night, obviously didn't work. I guess we can go to, I do want to, I don't know, applaud, tip my hat to Bobby Rahal for staying out of the team's way when
agreed
everything was going on. Cause at first I was kind of like, I don't know, this is kind of garbage leadership. And I'm pretty sure I might've texted you that.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I'm like, well, you know, each team has a strategist. Each team is doing its own program. Bobby is the team owner. He could easily get in there and tell Jack, you're not running. Graham is getting this thing. Please don't give another attempt. And the team would probably listen. Instead, you know, he sat there on the golf cart watching intently until it was too late and then didn't complain, you know, didn't like try to like throw shade or anything, like, you know, subtly or whatever. So bravo to that.
I thought he did a really good job. It was kind of confusing because he seemed almost nonchalant about mm-hmm. it for most of the mm-hmm. time. But I think that's actually, when we were talking about it, it looked like he didn't care. And that's what we were both interpreting seeing as poor leadership.
Yeah.
But I actually think that when we think about it now, that is excellent leadership because you're not screaming at the team like a Lawrence Stroll would be, berating people and making things worse. You're accepting the situation that you're in and putting on a brave face. And he's been through it, like he said multiple times, and he's not blaming anyone. Mm-hmm. So I think he actually did a fantastic job because I can't see a lot of other IndyCar owners. And I'm thinking of some certain ones that I'm pretty sure you can probably guess who would be kind of meddling in their affairs if they had to, you know, if their cars were fighting for the last spot, that there would be certain team owners who would be right in there telling the teams what to do and not letting it sort mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. fall the way the cars are going to fall.
So do we want to talk about the intensity of that last 15 minutes or do we just talk about, or do we just go, holy shit, that was nuts. I don't know about you, but obviously because of life, I wasn't at the track this weekend and I was sitting in the living room with my dad and Harvey goes out for a second attempt and you can tell he's almost there, but obviously ends up like not quite there. I think partway through that run, I started pacing around because this is nothing against, I have nothing against Graham Rahal, but Jack Harvey has always been nice to us on the show, like since like day one of the show. He's always been a good interview, always been helpful, whatever we need. So I was pulling for Jack Harvey. And then he didn't get it. I was like, oh no. So that last run, I am pacing around the kitchen. The dog is staring at me like I'm completely insane. And when he finally gets in, I'm pretty sure like my dad and I both shouted, high-fived, like fist pumps, like everything. Like it was like he won the race and he barely, you know, by 0.07 of a mile an hour made the field. And there's probably a 0.00001% chance he even gets a podium. But the fact he just made the field was epic.
Agreed. And I think I tweeted something out on that basically compared it to the Kyle Kaiser making the field. We're never going to forget that. No one ever thought that Kyle Kaiser was going to win the race. But just the fact that Jack, who has had an extremely rough time with that organization, did this really inspiring effort and just would not kind of accept his fate of getting bumped from the race, it was really impressive, I think. And it, no matter who it was in that car, you had to root for the underdog because that's just the way that the story was working. And like you said, nothing against Graham, but to watch somebody go out there and at the last second, you know, the clock is at zero. It's just a classic sports story. And I don't think I've been that excited about any race even that we've seen this mm-hmm. year. I mean, just the emotions that I was even feeling. So it's incredible. And we have to give a shout out to Graham Rahal for talking to the media, for being open, right? And, you know, he cried on national TV. I don't think anybody really wants to do that, but he wasn't like bawling. He didn't, he tried to talk to the media and then he went away and he had a really good moment with his family. I thought it was cool. And I think his reaction of not, I don't know, like he wasn't disappointed for himself, right? It was about missing the race, but it wasn't, there was no blame for Jack Harvey. There was no hard feelings. That's cool. And, you know, you maybe expect somebody whose dad is the team owner to act like a spoiled baby and stomp their feet. And sometimes Graham acts like a spoiled baby and stomps his feet and whines.
Yep.
This wasn't one of those times. And, you know, just, it was really cool.
Yeah. I definitely agree there. I think the other thing kind of adding to what you just said is when Graham spoke today, he said, listen, I'm not jumping in Jack's seat. I'm not buying his ride. I'm here to support the team and, you know, get them ready for this weekend and kind of do a little bit of looking ahead to Detroit the weekend after. So, you know, mainly thank you to Graham so that like the media doesn't get 16 million questions over the next couple of days on if Graham is going to, you know, buy that ride or, you know, some way, shape or form or whatever. So thank you, Graham. I guess we can go to predictions. I don't think there's anything else.
I don't know. The poll shootout, the top six was cool.
Yeah.
But
it's it was after the emotion of the bumping thing. And it was really like, my dad is a lifelong Foyt fan. So I wanted to see, you know, the odds were if it was a Foyt car, it was going to be Ferrucci on the pole. And so, you know, I could see like how excited my dad was when Ferrucci went out there in qualifying. And, you know, Santino is also one of the drivers that was very nice to my dad a couple years ago when him and I were at the track together. So obviously it didn't happen, but still qualifying fourth was epic. But after he qualified fourth, I was kind of like, okay, you know, whatever happens, happens. Like it's just so hard to compare. Like it's hard to like have that same level of energy after you've just seen like the craziest bumping in, you know, 5 years, 6 years.
Yeah, no one in the top six, and this is not an insult or a slight at any of them, but Pello, VK, Rosenquist, Ferrucci, O'Ward, and Dixon, only Ferrucci of that group would be an interesting pole sitter, like someone that you would not have expected. The others were people who I'm sure the odds of them making poles were pretty high, right? So most of the interesting people, I think, were down. Like Benjamin Peterson would have been a really fascinating story. I think Sato would be interesting as a one-off. You know, people like that, I guess. And Tony Kanaan in his last Indy 500 would have been really interesting. But the other guys, not that it's not cool that Alex Palou just did such a fast time and was, you know, it was incredible feat. But he's the type of guy you expect to see on the front row at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Okay, predictions. Let's see here. Let's do this. I know I've said this on the show probably last Indy 500. So me, my dad, my brother who like rarely watches IndyCar, and my cousin also Mike, who we have our own Indy 500 prediction kind of game every year. We're going to bring it to the show. We might have done this last year. I think we might have done it last year. So grab your starting lineup. We're going to pick one car from the first 11. We're going to pick one car from the middle 11. And we're going to pick two cars from the last 11. We'll add up their finishing positions at next week, and we'll come up with an average. And whoever has the better average can win. So let's go back and forth on these to make it quick. So let's see here. Who is your driver in the first 11?
Hold on, I just clicked on a starting lineup on CBS Sports, and it gave me some annoying thing about ad blocker. So now I'm on Motorsport, and I have no issues. So screw you, CBS Sports. Oh, never mind. No, Motorsports is doing the same thing and asking me about ad blocker and to subscribe. Why can't I just pull up a starting grid? There we go. Thank you, planetf1.com.
Sporting News is the one that helped me.
Okay. So I'm picking my person in the first 11.
Yes.
Let's go with Rossi.
All right, I'll take Santino. Because two of the four Indy 500 wins by his boss man, AJ Foyt, came from the starting position of fourth. And in the last seven or eight 500s, I think all but one have been won from, I think, the top five or the top six. So that's what I'm going with. All right.
Middle 11th.
Yeah.
Let's see. Middle 11. Ryan Hunter-Reay.
All right. I will take Scotty McLaughlin. All right, we're going to do two from the bottom 11. You and I can alternate, so we can give each other a chance here. Go ahead.
Bottom 11.
I know. It's hard when you get to this.
It's hard because not necessarily like the drivers, but some people like
track position
that I would want to pick. Yeah, and I don't know if I trust them to also some of them to stay clean the whole race. Okay. Is Colton Herta in the last 11?
No.
No, he's this doesn't have numbers, so I'm just looking. Who's the cutoff there?
The cutoff would be 111, 12 to 23. The cutoff is Marco on down.
Okay. Let's go with, you know what? I'm going to take a flyer on Catherine Legg.
Okay.
I will come back.
I will take Canapino. Who's your last pick of the draft?
Enerson.
Ooh, damn. Okay.
Why you say damn? Were you gonna pick
I was
that?
Gonna pick him. Yeah.
Okay.
I thought that was a fun pick. You know what? Let's have some fun with this. Jack Harvey, you're my last pick.
Nice.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll wrap it there. Everybody knows what the times are for this weekend. Carb Day is on Friday. Legends Day stuff is on Saturday. The race is on Sunday, in case you didn't know. If you're energetic, wake up early. You can watch the parade at Monaco for 2 hours. And yeah, that's about it. Well, Frenchie, you guys have fun. And
yeah, come we'll say hi back to us if you're there.
Yep, come say hi to
us,
them.
Tweet us. Yep. Sarah and I will be there.
Yeah, you know, harass them, throw hot dogs at them. Don't throw beer at them. Just throw hot dogs. And I hope like Cody or somebody actually like pretends to throw a hot dog now or something like that.
It'd be such a waste of a hot dog.
I mean, hot dogs are gross anyway. So hot
take. You mean hot dogs?
I mean, I'll eat them if they're available, if it's like the only thing available, but I'd rather not. You know, made with like horse meat and glue and, you know, mulch and I don't know whatever else is in there. But yeah. Okay. Don't eat hot dogs. And we'll be back next week to recap the greatest spectacle in racing.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.